Statements and opinions by guests of Mysterious Radio are not to be considered as endorsed by sponsors or affiliated networks. Any rebroadcast, reproduction, or other use of this podcast without the express written consent of Mysterious Radio is strictly prohibited.
Get ready for a night filled with conspiracies, strange places, the paranormal, UFOs, legends, and myths from around the world. With your hosts, K-Town, on Mysterious Radio.
All right, thank you for joining me tonight on Mysterious Radio. I am your host, K-Town, and tonight I have a special guest that will be sharing some haunted history with us. And this time is Haunted Hospitals. My special guest is Mark Leslie. He co-authored the book Haunted Hospitals. And of course, it is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and others. Now, stories about these haunted hospitals and institutions have always fascinated me. One day I do plan to visit these places, but not without protecting myself, because I am a firm believer that you can indeed pick up something that you do not want coming home with you. And I'm not trying to deal with any of that. Okay, let's get into some haunted history. All right, my special guest tonight is Mark Leslie, returning to the show to discuss his new book, Haunted Hospitals. You can add this book to your growing collection by going to Amazon. Mark, I want to thank you very much for returning to discuss some of the most haunted hospitals and asylums from around the world.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back on. It's great to be here.
Well, I appreciate your time, and I was very excited to hear that you were writing this last year, because I had you on the show, and then you gave me a little breadcrumb there and told me, hey, I'm writing something about haunted hospitals. I said, let's talk about that one. You said, wait a minute, it's not done yet. So I was excited. You know, I knew this was coming, and I have not had anyone actually on the show to specifically talk about haunted hospitals. I do appreciate your time, and I can't wait to talk about it with you.
I'm surprised, because hospitals are among the most haunted places on earth.
Yeah,
it's where people die. It's where they're born. It's where all kinds of trauma happens. I mean, it's kind of like a hotbed for paranormal activity.
Oh, absolutely. It absolutely is. Now, how long did it take you to put in the research for this particular book?
Now, fortunately, I was really, really lucky. So I had a co-author for this one, Rhonda Parrish. And so I only had to research half the book, and she researched the other half of the book. So I benefited tremendously. And so basically it was about 6 months of research, roughly, in terms of when we started the concept, and then realized, okay, we divided up what chapters we were going to do. And then we started looking into them. And as we were doing that, we had a Google spreadsheet where we put down the name of the place, the location, the city, the state, the province, the country. And then we put an estimation on how many words we thought the chapter would be. And then we would also put like our name. Like, I got dibs on this one. So, for example, Rhonda, who is from Alberta, had dibs on most of the Alberta stories because she actually lived near one of the locations. And obviously I did stuff that was closer to me because I could actually go there. It's always more fun when you can actually physically be at a location.
Oh, absolutely. Now, are all of these abandoned?
No. Several of the hospitals are still functioning. Although, I mean, there are quite a number of them that are closed down, are, boarded up, covered, asbestos, and dangerous to go in. Some of them are even, they're closed down, so they're not operating as hospitals, but some of them are operating as amusement parks, haunted houses. Some of them are operating as locations. The perfect set for a horror movie where you need a hospital scene is an old abandoned hospital, right? Especially if you're, so many of those, I can't even think of some off the top of my mind, but so many of those hospital movies were even shot at one of the locations that we talk about in the book.
Okay, you're right about that. That is a perfect location, as a matter of fact. Now, did you try to include hospitals that weren't as well known?
It didn't matter if the hospital was a well-known haunted location. All that mattered was that as we were doing our research, we either got tips from people who, submitted tips via an online form we had, or emailed us, or contacted us through, you know, Facebook or social media. All that really mattered is that there was enough of a story for us to be able to share that would be interesting about the hospital. So didn't matter if it was, you know, the world's most famous hospital that, you know, that everyone has heard about, or that it was an obscure place that nobody had ever heard about. All that mattered really was that we could get a good story out of it, actually. And that's a really hard part when you're researching a haunted book, because you hear lots of really interesting stories, particularly when I'm doing book signings. A lot of times people will approach me when I'm doing a book signing, and you know, because I write paranormal, they kind of hunker down and they whisper. They said, you know, I had something happen to me, and you know, obviously my first response is, oh my goodness, tell me about it. And sometimes there isn't enough there. It's this interesting incident that happened that's very disturbing, but it might only be 100 words. And so unless I can build that into a larger chapter, it is, so far for the types of books that I've put together, I'm not able to use a lot of those smaller episodes, because they're really great anecdotes, but they may not fit necessarily into a chapter on this location. So that's usually one of the challenges that I find, is I often find some really great, wonderful, really short stories or anecdotes that I'm not able to put into a book. And so they're floating around out there, and maybe one day I'll be able to, you know, capture them and be able to incorporate them into something like a larger picture.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, did you have an opportunity to visit the ones that you actually researched?
Not all of them, unfortunately. I just don't have enough money to get there. Now, what often happens is, especially because you're doing the research in about a 6 to 9 month period, usually no more than a year of research. So a lot of times you try to pick close locations so you can go there, you can take pictures, you can maybe talk to people if it's still operational, obviously, or if it's, you know, operational hospital, you want to talk to nurses and doctors who, or staff who work there. But more often than not, I visit locations after I've written about them. It happened with Tomes of Terror when I wrote about haunted bookstores and libraries. There were several bookstores that I didn't get to until after the book had been published. Which is kind of sad, because then I got more stories. but that's just the way it happens. Otherwise, you could spend all your time researching and no time actually writing and getting the book out.
Okay, that's understandable. All right, so let's talk about the level of paranormal activity that occurs at these abandoned hospitals and asylums. Did you find in your research that the activity is more prevalent in hospitals where patients suffer the most?
Yeah, I think, and I didn't do any sort of scientific study. It's just that gut feeling that you get, is that in places where trauma was the deepest, the hardest, the toughest, that tended to be the place where, the echoes in time may be louder. Maybe the disturbed spirits that are not at rest are more prevalent in those places. And so that, you know, it depends on your theory of what a ghost is it a disturbed spirit that's stuck on Earth and can't make it to the next plane? Or is it such a traumatic episode that it actually left a ripple in time and space? And it was so traumatic that the ripples were strong and large, like a giant tidal wave, and the effect that that has on bodies of water. So regardless of what you believe, hospitals have those things. And that's why we included prisons in this book, because when you look at hospitals, you get this intriguing combination. You can't look at hospitals without looking at insane asylums, and you can't look at insane asylums without looking at prisons, because especially back in the 1800s, I mean, the earlier you go, there wasn't much of a division. A prison and an insane asylum and a hospital may have been one giant building where they just threw everyone in together. And so there wasn't as much differentiation as you perhaps get today between a hospital, a hospital for, you know, physical ailments, a hospital for mental ailments, and then a prison for the, you know, criminals. So you had the criminally insane beside pickpockets, beside someone who was there maybe suffering from pneumonia, and they were all like jammed together in these buildings. And obviously when you think about the different kinds of spirits or people who were thrust into the same space, that causes conflict in and of itself. And so you're looking at this conflict over time. You're looking at this conflict with, people who want to get out of there because it's not pleasant. It's a terrifying place to be. And that's something that's probably stayed in the air, in the very ground where these things happen.
All right. Now let's get into some of these hospitals. The first one I want to talk about is in Eastern Canada, and it's called Riverview Hospital. And in your book, you said it's a very scary place. Tell us why.
Yeah. So Riverview is British Columbia. So the people might think of Vancouver, British Columbia. This is sort of like North Hollywood for a lot of people. It opened as a mental health facility in the early, like 1910, 1912, 1913, something like that. And it ran until 2012, so almost 100 years in existence. It was a beautiful, large building. It had like the east lawn and the west lawn and a huge grounds. And so it was originally meant to hold a maximum of, 475 to 500 patients. And it ended up housing more than almost 2,000 occupants. So by 1956, the hospital had ended up having like 4,000 or more patients crammed in there. Staff members at the hospital shared stories of carrying ice cream pails full of pills up to the patients. And the bed crowding was so bad that the beds were so tightly packed in some of the floors that to make a bed, the orderlies had to pull a bed or two out of the room and put them into the hallway so they could get around and make the beds. So imagine these kinds of living conditions. Now, Riverview, a lot of people who have watched horror films or have watched X-Files or Supernatural, which has been on for many, many, many seasons, or Fringe, or many different horror movies, may have actually seen Riverview Hospital, because a lot of these places, the East Lawn facility, for example, which for sure the X-Files and Fringe and Supernatural were shot there, but it's this classic old, like gothic-looking haunted hospital sort of feel to it. And that's still used for a lot of movie shoots. And because Vancouver is a popular place for people to travel north from Hollywood to do television shows and movies, this hospital ends up getting used a lot. So if you've seen a movie with a haunted hospital in it, chances are you're looking at Riverview. Now, it's interesting when I talk about the hospital being used for movies, is one of the stories about the hospital has to do with a horror film that was being shot there. And I found this research in a book that a friend of mine had written called Haunted Canada. And in it, he shares a story that this actor who is known as Kaz, he had a small part in a horror film. And so when he wasn't, needed on set or anything, he would explore different parts of the building. But he kept describing that he'd get into certain locations or certain spots in the hospital, and he would just have this really weird chill that would overcome him. And he had two different encounters where he actually saw something that kind of freaked him out. So in his story, he mentions that so two of the five floors of the West Lawn building gave him the worst vibes of all. And one time when he was going through the basement tunnels, he was walking through the tunnels. He just became overwhelmed with this eerie and bizarre feeling. It just chilled him to the bone. But then he encountered what he thought was a dog, which never materialized. It was just a dog that he saw that seemed to be standing at the end of the hallway, looking at him and growling and moving towards him. And anyone knows you can't outrun a canine. You cannot outrun a dog or a wolf or anything on four legs. And it started charging towards him. And obviously, he was terrified. And he obviously knew that there was no point in running. And as the creature lunged towards him, it disappeared. and that kind of freaked him out. So that was one of the things that had happened to that happened to him. And then the other incident, which I thought was quite fascinating, was something that he called the Candy Lady Ghost. So she is a ghost who legend has it lives on or near the fourth floor in a room that's called the Ladybug Room. Now, this room is unique for a couple of reasons. So the door doesn't have a doorknob, and it's the only room in the entire building it's always closed, and it seems to have this ambient light coming from somewhere inside, and it's visible, a crack that you can see as you approach the room from under the door. The door is locked tight. You can't open it. Kaz had tried to pry the door open. It simply wouldn't budge. So this one time when he's trying the door yet again, because he was just fascinated by this place and wondering where the light was coming from, he knelt down. He tried to peer inside the room. He couldn't see anything, but he could have sworn that he heard something breathing on the other side of the door. So Kaz, who had previously been skeptical, claimed to be a non-believer in ghosts, left that building and that set of shooting the movie a firm believer that something, and he couldn't explain it, but something bizarre and supernatural was happening in that building.
Maybe that's why they choose to film there all the time, because it does have that allure about it, it sounds like. I'm going to have to go back and see if I can remember what that hospital looked like, because I am a fan of X-Files and Supernatural. So, I mean, that's good to hear that you put one in there
Yeah, and I think it was midway through the first season of Supernatural is where I recognized it, because I was getting caught up on Supernatural. I had not seen all of the episodes, and I was watching it on Netflix while I was researching the book, and I could have sworn that, you know, it looked like the pictures I had seen in my research and the descriptions that I had had for the hotel. For the hospital story.
Well, that was awesome that you included that in the book, actually. So a lot of people be surprised about the ones you had put in there, because I want to say right off top, many of these I had not heard about. So you did a phenomenal job digging in, you and your co-author digging in and finding ones that may, you know, people may not have heard about. So
oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. I'm glad you appreciate the work that that was put into that, because it is long days or nights at the library digging through old newspapers, internet searches, grabbing piles and piles of books from the library because you can't afford to buy them all,
right.
and just digging through everything. A lot of newspaper articles too is where you find a lot of these stories.
There's another one I want to discuss. And that's the Alberta Hospital for the Insane. You titled that The Possessed Woman, so I'm anxious to hear what happened there.
As you can imagine, I'm a guest on a lot of radio programs and podcasts that talk about the supernatural and the paranormal. And this one time, prior to knowing I was even going to work on haunted hospitals, I must have been talking about haunted bookstores and libraries or whatever. And it was one of those, you know, midnight till 3 a.m. radio programs. And I got a call from a gentleman. Sometimes, you know, towards the end of the call, people can call in and share their own experiences. And this is one of those calls where my hair was standing right on end. I'm by myself in my apartment. You know, I've just got the one lighter on my desk, and I'm, you know, I'm just sitting there sipping my water and talking. And getting completely chilled out by this story. So he had worked at this hospital in the Pinoca Institute. It was the Alberta Mental Hospital, the Pinoca Mental Hospital, and it was building number one. So this is a hospital in Alberta, not far from Calgary, Alberta, which is where I met Rhonda, my co-author for the book. And he worked there. This was a building, I think, that was started in 1911. And it was Alberta's, the province, which is like a state in Canada. It was the province's primary healthcare facility. And it was the first mental hospital in Alberta. So he was working there. I'm going to call him Pat. and it's funny, I already identified him as him. But because he was working at the hospital, didn't want to use his real name. And the reason I initially started with Pat is because Pat could be a man or a woman. But I guess I've already revealed that Pat is a guy, but that's okay. Let's just keep referring to Pat as he. So this was a woman that we use the name Martha. as the patient as well. Because again, we some of the stories that you hear from folks, you want to protect the identity of the patient and the families, so you don't reveal the real names. So Martha was a woman who died sometime in the late 1980s, early 1990s, and she'd been admitted to the hospital as a young child, an adolescent, a young teenager, in 1950 or so. And she pretty much spent most of her life, her adult life, all of her adult life in the hospital, which was unfortunately a common thing that could happen to a lot of people. So she's in her mid-50s in the early 80s. When Pat encountered her. And so he conjured up ideas. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the film, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, with a somnambulist and sleepwalking people. And just that weird feeling of just people walking around either dazed or drugged up all the time, because that's the way that they had to deal with a lot of patients because there weren't a lot of options. But he was working there and described that it was this eerie feeling like that at the hospital. And he was working on what he called the permanent night flow, which is like the overnight shifts. And he said there was normally two or three staff members on duty in the hospital. But because the unit they were in was difficult to control, it wasn't uncommon to have five or six staff members booked in to deal with some of the issues that came up. Now, he described this staff meeting that they had, where it was doctors and nurses and support workers and orderlies and other staff. And they were there to discuss and decide upon solutions. And everyone in the room, you can see like this visible shudder when Martha came up as a topic of conversation, because somebody suggested that there was such a presence about her that they suggested she might actually be possessed. And several staff members agreed with that, because when they dealt with her, they dealt with kicking and screaming, but she was punching and biting. And one of the workers had so many injuries from Martha that she refused to work there again. They actually considered the possibility of bringing in an exorcist to deal with her. So her room was really close to the television room of where they would sit during their breaks and stuff like that. And sometimes they'd be sitting in the television room and they could hear voices that weren't coming from the television. Pat said that you'd hear voices as if she were talking to somebody, as if there were a second person in the room. But when you walked over and checked on her, she was lying in bed fast asleep. There was nobody in the room. She was sleeping. She was all by herself. And he said that sometimes when you went into her room was colder than an icebox. It was like a big, giant walk-in refrigerator. And she would wake up complaining about the cold. And then they would try to figure out what was going on. They couldn't adjust the temperature. They moved her to another room. And, an hour or so after they moved her to another room, the room she was in became normal temperature. And the new room they moved her to became cold again. And then he got to the part of the story that just kind of gave me the most chills. And that's when he said, this one night when she was in a seclusion room. So sometimes, he said, when patients lost control, they'd have to be put in a private seclusion room so that they wouldn't hurt themselves or other patients or staff members. And he described it as a 10 by 12 foot room. There's a door at the front and a window at the back. Now, the window sill was sloped at a 45 degree angle to prevent anyone from being able to perch on it in order to, jump or maybe hang themselves or anything like that they could do up there. And there was a large curtain on the inside of the room, which was kind of meant, and the curtain was on the inside of the room in front of the door, and it was meant to prevent light or stimulation from getting in. It kind of controlled the atmosphere of the room a little bit more. And inside the room was a mattress on the floor, and there was a blanket that was known as a strong sheet because it was made from multiple layers of thick canvas designed to be difficult to tear, again, so that the patients couldn't use it to harm themselves. So Pat says this one night they're sitting there. Martha was yelling. She's hitting the wall and punching and kicking. A screaming bloody murder. They weren't sure if she was having a dream or a hallucination. They ended up having to tranquilize her. They put her in the seclusion room. And later on, he walks in, pulls back the curtain. He turns on the nightlight, and she's not laying on the mattress. And she wasn't standing in the corner someplace. What he saw was her standing in the middle of the room. except she was standing at about his shoulder height on the side of the wall, facing out into the room. And she looked exactly as if a normal person standing upright in the room, except she was standing horizontally, sticking out from the wall, their feet on the wall. Her face was looking down at the floor, and she was staring straight at the floor. Now, he said her nightgown was done up around her, and parts of it were hanging down. So gravity was working on her nightgown. She had short hair, so you couldn't see her hair hanging down. But it was so freaky to see that. She didn't acknowledge him in any way. She was just staring at the floor. He said he took one look, realized what he was seeing. He turned around, walked straight out, and he sat down in the TV room. He never told anyone about this story until he called this radio program I was on, and then he shared the story. And it was a week after that that he talked to a friend of his who worked at the hospital. And the friend of his who worked at the hospital said, I didn't want to say anything either, but one night when I went into her room, I walked in and I looked at her, and she was standing, looking straight at me, standing straight up vertically, but she was about a foot off the floor. And he did the same thing. He turned around and walked out of the room. And that left me with such shivers.
Oh, that's vicious right there. That is really, really creepy. All right, I'm talking to author Mark Leslie about his book, Haunted Hospitals. It is available on Amazon. And you can find out more about Mark's books on his website by going to markleslie.ca. And I will have more for you when we return right after this. All right, we are back. And now let's discuss one of the most notorious of them all, Waverly Hills Sanatorium, which has to have a tremendous amount of psychic energy due to the deaths that occurred there. Can you tell us from your research why that location is so haunted?
Well, this is one of those hospitals that was like a small city. It grew to be such a large size. And Rhonda did the research for this particular one, but she kept she kept finding a story about a certain type of ghost, or, you know, ghost. Usually people nickname the ghosts. And then she thought she was done, and then she'd find another story, and then another story. So it started off to be, it was something that, you know, we thought would maybe be a 1,000-word chapter, and it ended up being significantly larger. It just, so many floors, so many parts to this building that... there's jokes that it would have its own zip code. That's how large it was. So when you have a complex like that, that had so many people in it and so many different things happening, including, I want to tell you about the death chute, which I think is what you might be, or the body chute, or the death tunnel. Things like that happening, that would be, potentially could lead to so many, trapped spirits or traumatic vibrations in time.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. And I did read a little bit about that. I'm not sure the purpose of the chute, though. I mean, why did they use that?
Okay, so the hospital, it was built on top of this massive hill. And so getting supplies back and forth could be a bit of a challenge, particularly when you're thinking about, you know, not now it wouldn't be as big an issue, but, you know, back in the day. So to solve the problem, so they had this 500-foot-long tunnel from the hospital to the base of this big hill. Now, one side of the tunnel had stairs so people can go up and down it, and then the other side was a sloped, and it was like a slide, so they could have carts, anything with wheels, that they could basically roll up and down this. So in time, they started to, especially when they were moving things out of the hospital, they started to just let it go down to the bottom because it was so much more efficient than trying to walk it down. So as the legend has it, when the death rate at the hospital started to peak, and some of the stories say that there was one person dying every hour at a particular time, they would actually transport the dead bodies through this. And that's where it picked up the nickname, the death tunnel. And so that's whatever the cause was, people started to report weird and eerie shadows, which kind of relates back to shadow people, who are just a lot of stories of shadow people throughout the hospital. They would hear echoes of footsteps, and they would hear voices that just seemed to be disembodied voices. But one of the most bizarre things that happened there was a paranormal group. Johnsdale Paranormal Group was doing research in the tunnel because of all the stories they had heard. They were using an infrared camera to take pictures of the location. And they're standing midway between the top and the bottom, and one of them spotted something near the bottom of the tunnel. It was like this glowing purple ball. And at first it just seemed to be hovering in place. But then when they turned off their infrared camera, it was they couldn't see any external light. The light started to change and it started to alter. And so they used a regular camera. They started taking pictures. And if you look at the photos in sequence, it looks like the dark purple blob is moving towards them in the tunnel before vanishing. No idea what it was. Was it some sort of weird shadows? Was it some sort of electrical interference? Did it go past them? Not sure what it was. It was just this really, really eerie thing in the tunnel.
How many people were reported to have died at that location?
Well, I mean, the stories say it was one person every hour, but it looked like upon other research that was done that it was only 100 to maybe 150 deaths a year, people dying in a year, but it doesn't seem to match. Some of the legends suggested it was a lot higher than that, but still, I mean, that's quite a— it's quite a number of people. But again, you're thinking about the size of that hospital and the population. That can be, still a pretty traumatic thing that's happening there.
Now, that was one of the hospitals that was— yeah, I'm not sure, but I read that they were doing, taking off body parts and, just doing some horrific things like that to some of their patients. Is that correct?
I'm not sure if that was the hospital where they had done that, but for sure. The treatment of mental illness could be pretty substantial and pretty terrifying. Trepanning is a thing that they would do where they're basically kind of like, if you've heard of where they would drill holes in the skull to try and let out the evil spirits. It's on par with that sort of thing. And keep in mind, when they're drilling the holes in the, into the skull of a patient, they're not giving them an anesthesia. It's not like when the dentist gives you the, rubs the thing on your gums before he sticks the needle in, which is Novocaine before the operation. They're just going ahead and performing these procedures that had to have been absolutely terrifying, disturbing beyond belief, nightmarish. I can only imagine the screams that you would hear from these patients echoing down the halls. So you not only have the patients who are suffering through this, this traumatic treatment, but then you also have the other patients in an overcrowded hospital who are hearing this, which can be almost as terrifying. It's like when you're sitting in the dentist, because the average person hasn't encountered this, but the average person might have been sitting in the dentist chair waiting to go in, and then you hear somebody moaning and they're crying and maybe even screaming out in pain every once in a while. It's certainly enough to want you to get up and leave. Unfortunately, when you're a patient at a place like this, you can't get up and leave, and that makes it all the more terrifying.
Yes, it does. All right, now I want you to share with us one that you found that you're particularly fond of, or one that you had a great time researching.
Well, it was interesting. So like I'd mentioned before, I didn't really get a chance to go to many of the places prior to writing the book. Sometimes it was after. And one of the places I had the chance of visiting afterwards was the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum in West Virginia. This is in Weston, West Virginia. And the stories about this place were that once you got admitted there, you never got out again, at least not alive. Now, it was originally called the Weston State Hospital. It was established in 1858, took over 20 years to build. And it was amazing to visit. So my girlfriend and I were traveling. I had to be down in Florida for a writer's conference in the summer. And we live up near Toronto, Ontario. And we thought it would be fun to take some time rather than to fly down, take some time and drive down. So we are working on a book on haunted bars and breweries. So we specifically pinpointed some haunted bars and breweries we wanted to visit along the way, take 4 or 5 days to get down there. But then we also determined that there were some of the hospitals I had already written about that we wanted to visit. And so on the way back from Orlando, back up through West Virginia, we decided to stop and visit the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. Now, the interesting thing about this story is we were driving through the mountains in West Virginia. It had been a long day. I think we had left Orlando and we wanted to make it to West Virginia so we could spend a lot of time the next day going on the tours, because it's a closed down hospital. It's abandoned, not abandoned. It's been taken over by a local history group. It's a protected, beautiful, gorgeous building. But they do tours. They do historic tours. They do tours of criminally insane. They do a ghost tour. And then they have a sort of a mini museum there as well. And it's just this amazingly, incredibly beautiful building to walk through. But it's also an eerie place to go. So we wanted to go on a tour of that. So we're driving back. It's probably midnight, after midnight. We've been driving all day from Orlando. It's foggy. We're in the mountains. And the first hotel we stopped at, just, you know, as we were getting into Weston, was all booked up. And so we made it to this next hotel. And when I went in, she said, well, there's only one room left. And they said, you know, it's two double beds. We don't have a queen or a king, you know. And so we looked at each other and like, well, we're going to bed. It doesn't matter if, you know, one of us is asleep on the floor. It doesn't matter. We're just going to go in and go to bed. We're tired. So we had gone in. We're exhausted. We just wanted to get to sleep. And so Liz was really, really cold. So she pulled up a hoodie and she was in the bed closest to the bathroom. And I was in the bed closest to the door. And we had stayed at a similarly shaped hotel earlier in our trip on our way down. And it was perhaps a hotel that wasn't the first hotel we stayed at wasn't as nice of a place. And so we were so creeped out and scared at that hotel that we actually ended up putting furniture in front of the door. So this, I have to say that because this sort of sets up the premise. So Liz is sleeping with a hoodie pulled over her head, facing against the wall. I'm sleeping in the other bed. In the middle of the night, I wake up and I hear Liz. I hear her getting up and I can hear her shuffling towards the bathroom. And I look up and I see this shape moving towards the bathroom. And I'm laying in bed and I wait for the bathroom light to turn on. And I wait for the light to turn on. And as I'm laying there waiting for the light to turn on, I hear her breathing in her sleep in the bed beside me. And I kind of freak out and went, oh my God. First thing I thought was, oh my God, somebody's sneaking in a room. Somebody broke into the room, because I was thinking the same layout as that other place where we were kind of afraid someone was going to break in. And I looked. The door, I had left my contact lenses in. Normally I wear glasses and take my contacts out, but because it was a late night, I just left them in to sleep. I looked the door, the chain was still there, everything was fine. And I went, oh my God, you're overtired, go back to sleep. And sometime later, I heard a distinct, like a clunk on the table at the foot of my bed where we had the laptops and our passports and stuff like that. And I thought, oh my God, someone's in the room. Someone's in the room. And I sat up again and I thought, well, maybe there's a connecting door. And I looked to see and there was no connecting door. And I thought, my God, you're just being paranoid. And so the next morning, as we're getting ready to go to the lunatic asylum and go on the tour, I jokingly said, I said, did you get up and go to the washroom last night? And she says, no, I slept the whole night through. And I said, well, that's weird. And then I shared the story of what had happened. She said, well, I wasn't going to say anything, but now that you mentioned that, I had something weird happen last night, but I thought it was my imagination. She was laying in bed. She had the hood over her head. She's facing the wall, and she felt someone reach and touch her shoulder, and she knew it wasn't me, and she could feel that someone was standing over her, and she's a feisty person. So what she did is she tightened up and she spun around ready to just, you know, knock them with a left hook, and there was nothing there. But she said, when she thought about it, she thought there was a woman standing over her in the room, and there was a distinctive presence of a woman. So, of course, the first thing I did is I rushed down to talk to the desk, the clerk at the desk. We never felt, it was creepy and it was eerie. We never felt terrified of her presence. We just felt this really strange presence in the room. And we hadn't even gotten to the lunatic asylum yet.
That's really weird. So did they share with you that something happened in that room to cause that type of activity?
No. They at least the young person who was working there, she hadn't heard any stories about it. But, you know, I wrote it down somewhere what the room number was. And I thought, I haven't done a book on haunted hotels yet, but I'm going to look into it. And probably in the future, I'm going to check to see if there were anything weird about that room. It was a nice hotel otherwise. And of course, we said goodbye to whoever she was when we left, because we were obviously occupying her space. And then we went on a beautiful and wonderful eerie tour of the arm of that hospital for the criminally insane, which was quite a fascinating tour of that lunatic asylum.
So tell us about that in asylum. Did anything creepy happen while you were there?
The creepy thing that happened that was definitely explainable was there was this one room with and it was only the two of us on this one tour, because there were like three different tours going on at the same time because it's such a big hospital, and we were the only two people on the tour, so we kind of had the guide to ourselves, which was amazing, perfect for research for a book. And he shared some interesting stories about things that had happened. A lot of times they'd do some things with playing cards, and sometimes the ghosts would respond. But there was this one room where he didn't explain it at first. He just came up to the door and he banged on the door, and then you could hear this bewildered fluttering and this insane screaming coming from the other side of the door. And we're like, "What the heck was that?" And he goes, "Oh, there's a hole in the one wall, and a whole bunch of bats live in this room. So they keep it completely closed. But if they bang on it, the bats suddenly freak out and they start screaming and making this god awful noise." So, I mean, he explained what it was exactly, and he says it's kind of a fun thing. It's a fun thing when you have a group of people together and you got someone who's being really, really cocky and pretending to be overly brave, and you get them to come up and, you know, tap on the door, and then they usually scream, sometimes wet their pants. So nothing eerie happened, although I think the eeriest thing is a picture that I share on the Haunted Hospital's Facebook page of a wheelchair that was just in the middle of this one hallway. And there was nothing, you know, except for the fact that it was there. There was nothing creepy about it. I just took what I thought was just an amazing eerie picture of this old wheelchair in the middle of an abandoned hospital alleyway. We heard some terrifying stories about some of the things that were done to patients, which, you know, I spoke about a little bit earlier. And we saw some of the rooms where they were kept and where the operations took place. And it was just, it was absolutely, it was a beautiful building, but there was just this just foreboding sense as we walked through it. And it was a good 90-minute tour of the building. And we got to see quite a few of it, quite a bit of it, which is quite amazing.
That's awesome. Mark, I've truly enjoyed having you on the show tonight. Now I want to give you an opportunity to tell my listeners if you have anything new coming up and where they can find more information about you.
Sure. I've got a new book called Macabre Montreal. Montreal is the second largest city in Canada. I've got some interesting stories there, including the connection to how Houdini died happened in Montreal, among a ghost that is seen tobogganing in a coffin down the side of a mountain in Montreal, as well as the legend of the devil in the flying canoe. And you can find me at Mark Leslie on Twitter, or look for me, marklesley.ca.
I appreciate your time. You're always welcome to come back here on Mysterious Radio.
Thank you so much. It's always great to chat with you.
All right, that's going to do it for tonight's edition. Remember, you can visit Mark's website at marklesley.ca. I want to thank my producer tonight, Kim, and the Mysterious Radio team. I am your host, K-Town. Have a great night, and I will see you next time on Mysterious Radio.
Like the show? Get more Mysterious Radio on our website. And don't forget to visit our Twitter and Facebook page.